talk about Parshas Ekev in light of what's going on yesterday in Beirut without thinking about these psukim and making sure that we sound the balance and proper note. I don't know if you heard, you probably saw, there was a massive, massive explosion in the port city, thousands of injuries, many, many deaths. And certainly, and first and foremost, there's no joy anywhere in any Jew's heart, in any place in Shemayim, when innocent people die, when anyone dies for that matter, even Rishayim, even when the Mitzrayim, who were Rishayim, who were actively chasing us to eliminate us, were killed at the Yamsuf. The Malachim wanted to say Shira, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Ma'ase yadai tovim bayam v'atem omim Shira, which is why we say, according to some deos, half Hallel, on the seventh day of Pesach, to remember that the Malachim were halted in the Shira. We could say Shira because we were singing about our own salvation, about the fact that our lives were spared. But we certainly, certainly never celebrate even the death of a wicked person. But certainly most of the people in Beirut who died were not wicked. They may disagree with Israel. They may be opposed to Israel. They're not actively planning death or harm to the state of Israel. Tzelem Elokim, Emaseh Yedei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when there's such suffering, and it's not just the suffering of those who were caught in the blast yesterday, but this is going to set that country back dozens of years. I mean, basically, as I told my kids today, Beirut's going to turn into Africa. Lebanon was already struggling with massive debt and massive corona issues. And this is going to set them back decades. And there were some Israeli politicians today, one or two, who said things which were very offensive. One in particular said, this is a happy day because it's Tu B'Av. The Gemara says, L'hoi yim tovim b'yisrael kamo Tu B'Av. And this is a happy day. Chalila v'chas. Chas v'shalom. Anyone who thinks this is a happy day for any human being, and certainly not Melechus Konim v'gay Kaddish, where Kaddish Baruch was proxies, we have to care about all humanity. That being said, it's hard not to realize that it seems as if, at least we don't want to be triumphant, we don't want to necessarily be so confident in Ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it seems as if in the Middle East, it seems as if all the countries that make peace with Israel are stable and survive, and all the countries that remain at war with Israel seems to collapse one after another. And have collapsing states in today's world is not so simple, but Iraq collapsed, Syria collapsed, Lebanon is now in a state of complete and total collapse. We wish HaKadosh Baruch Hu would find some other way to resolve Am Yisrael's needs without the toll to human suffering. And anytime a state collapses, a great toll on human suffering. But it seems as if these psukim that we're going to read about this week's Parsha and Ekev seem to be emerging. And that's something I want to try to teach you, to be able to see Torah and to be able to see Tanakh, especially because you don't have that much exposure to Tanakh, as living, breathing, not just statements about what happened 3,000 years ago, not just distant prophecies that are encoded that we can't make sense of, but to be able to see current events in our prophetic world in Psukim in the Torah, to connect those two. To be careful, you can't become too specific and say, oh, this Pasuk refers to this event, and this personality is this politician, but to see general patterns, to be able to live Tanakh as part of your life as a Yid and as an Oiv Yisrael and as someone that's invested in the history of Am Yisrael, and to realize the period that we're living through is a period of prophecy. So when you read these psukim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're going to come into Eretz Yisrael and you're going to be frightened. Ki tomar b'levavcha rabim hagoyim ha'ilim imeni. There's too many. We're surrounded. Echa uchal harisham. That word echa. How could I possibly even imagine conquering so many Arab countries that are at war, that are angry, that are opposed to us? Lo siram mehem. Remember Mitzrayim. Remember the miracles, the turnaround, the revolution, the overhaul of Mitzrayim was far greater than anything that we're witnessing. Mitzrayim, we'll see more. When Mashiach ultimately comes, we'll stop talking about Mitzrayim because the miracles of Mashiach will surpass the miracles of Mitzrayim. Okay? And then listen to this pasuk. V'nashal Hashem alokecha sagoyim ha'el mipanecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will literally, like you're pulling, nashal means you're pulling olives off of the tree. I'll just fall off of the tree. I'll talk about the end of the pasuk in a moment. Unisanam Hashem alokecha lefanecha. Hashem will place them before you. V'hamam mihuma gedola. Hashem will create this great overwhelmed destabilization. Mihuma means a revolution, a blast. It's hard to read these psukim without thinking about Syria, without thinking about Iraq, without thinking about Libya, without thinking about Beirut. Again, these are two different modes of thought. just to help you realize how each is important. The Gemara in Bavra Basra says that if you lose a relative, you're supposed to make two brachos. What bracha should you make? Eitan?
Hatov v'hameitiv and baruch dayan ha'emes.
Right. You have to make dayan ha'emes to absorb the loss and the tragedy. But you also, Eitan, have to make hatov v'hameitiv, because if you don't, then you fail to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's godless. Where it says Chizkia could have been Mashiach, but he failed to say Shira. Why do you fail to say Shira? Because Chizkia witnessed, if you read Chizkia properly, Melachim Beis, he saw the 10 tribes being exiled by Sennacherib. And Sennacherib almost destroyed Yerushalayim, but he didn't. And 185,000 soldiers were killed overnight on Pesach as they were about to lay siege to Yerushalayim. But he's too caught up with the tragedy of losing the 10 Meshvatim rather than seeing the miracles and Hatzalah of Yerushalayim. So you have to split your mind. As a human being, there's no joy today. It's a sad day. There are people suffering, and I live closer to the event in Baruch Hashem. Medinas Yisrael has offered help, has offered assistance, has offered to take in wounded people into our hospitals. Sadly, it proves again how hatred in general and anti-Semitism, which is the greatest hatred, is psychopathic. It's self-defeating. The Rav used to talk about this. Arami Oved Avi, Lavan, Bikesh, Lakor Sakol. Lavan wanted to kill, to murder Yaakov and all of Yaakov's children. Wait a second. Who were Yaakov's children? They were Lavan's grandchildren. Could you imagine hatred being so, I just spent this week exhausted running after my grandchildren, having them over at night, made a special party for them Monday night, just came for my two grandchildren in Ranana, buying them treats. You can't describe the love for a grandchild. And Lavan, German soldiers were standing alongside trains, waiting to go to the front, waiting to fight in Stalingrad where they were desperately needed. But no, the trains were busy taking Jews to Auschwitz. They hated Jews so much they were willing to cripple their own war effort. So hopefully they'll take our assistance, but even if they don't, I'm proud to be a Jew today. We offered assistance even during Corona. Our hospitals are very, very overstaffed right now, very overworked, but we invited victims of the blast in Lebanon to come spend time in Israeli hospitals and recuperate. I doubt they'll accept. It's sad that they won't accept. Now, the pasuk I just read, I wanted to talk about this later, but since I read the pasuk now, I'll talk about it now. Me'at, me'at, agarshenu, mipanav. Hashem says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow the Jewish people to conquer the land in stages. Me'at, me'at. Lo tuchal kalosam meher. You won't conquer Eretz Yisrael all at once. And so it was historically. When they first conquered Eretz Yisrael, it took them many, many years, even until David and Melech's reign, hundreds of years after they entered. We talk about the 14 years of wars and distribution. The main part of Eretz Yisrael was already conquered in 14 years. But there were areas that weren't conquered. The coast was not conquered. Yerushalayim was not conquered. It took them hundreds of years. Why, Hashem says? Pen tirbel l'chachaya sasadeh. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, because if you conquer Israel too quickly, there'd be too much land to settle, too much land to civilize, too many cities to build, too many conflicts between the jungle and the desert and the animal kingdom and humankind. So Hashem says, take it in stages, a city, another city, a couple of villages, so you can build cities, build fences, build civilization, drive out the animals. Hashem says, when you come into Eretz Yisrael, I know you think it's going to be automatic. I know you think that since it's Geula and it's Yad Hashem, it should be stunning and rapid, and overnight. Hashem says, I understand the human pace, and even though Hashem is fully capable of drawing a miracle and not and protecting us against the animals, right? Hashem could just as easily, if Hashem can control the animals of Mitzrayim, he can protect us against the animals in Eretz Yisrael, but Hashem wants the process of settling Eretz Yisrael to be human-based, that human beings should build their world so that we own it more, so that we love it more, and human beings need a pace that can't be absolute and immediate because there's too many animals. Okay? Now, remember I told you a few minutes ago about reading Tanakh and being able to project it from 3,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago to our state. We have similar thoughts in today's world. We came back in 1948 after being absent from Eretz Yisrael for 2,000 years. And if this is really Yad Hashem, maybe it should happen overnight. Maybe we should get all of Eretz Yisrael immediately. Why are people so opposed to us? Why, if I want to add a little corner to my house in the West Bank, it's a major international incident. Why isn't it so quick if it's Yad Hashem? And truth is, many people who don't see it as Yad Hashem will point to the slow, lagging pace as proof that it's not Yad Hashem. But what does Hashem tell us in Parshas Ekev? No, I want it to be a human process. And human beings, sometimes you need stages. Now, we don't have the beasts of the field, the Chayas Asada, to threaten us as they threatened our ancestors. But there's a lot of issues with building a state. You don't just build the state of Israel. You know how many dialects there are in Israel today? You know how many Jews have come back from different countries? I know when you live in Teaneck or in the Five Towns, or you think, oh, this is the center of all the Jews. There are a lot of Jews out there. There are Jews coming from Afghanistan and Kyrgyzstan and Russia and the Soviet Union and the Ukraine and France and Chile and even in Alon Shvut, our sleepy little town where I live, where the Gush is. We have a mountain right near the yeshiva called Givat Achish. We've been struggling with that mountain for many, many years since 48. And about, when was it? This was about, I think about 15 years ago, maybe 17 years ago. All of a sudden we got word that there was a group of 150 evangelical Christians in Peru who had converted to Judaism with their pastor, and they wanted to come live in Israel. So he said, why don't we let them come live on the illegal mountain post right near Alon Shvut? So he dumped 150 Peruvians right into our neighboring mountain. And since then, that mountain has become Peruvians, France, Morocco, Mexico, Russia, Ukraine. So there are a lot. It's not easy building a country with that many languages and that many cultures. It's not simple. Secular, religious, so many Jews today are secular because over the last 200 years, so many millions of Jews lost their religion. If you go back in 1780, most Jews are from, in the classic sense, 1680. What's happened over the last 200 years? Enlightenment, modernization, revolutions that made people feel the old world was outdated, and the new world, and of course the Holocaust. So many Jews in Israel today want to be from, so there are a lot of issues we have to work out in Israel. So it's not just, here's the key point, it's not just about how much land we have. It's about what type of state, what type of society, and what type of people we are assembling to settle that land. And it's a process. And you can't let your Avas Haaretz, or some people call Zionism, or some people call redemptive vision, be defined totally by how much land you have. It's not about land only. It's also about peoplehood. And that's why living in Israel is a struggle, not just to settle more land, which I feel proud to be part of that struggle. I'm a settler, and I've been a settler for 30 years, and I've been interviewed as a settler, but I'm just as concerned with what is the state of affairs in our society. And how could I improve our country with an infusion of a religious burst? Okay, so it's a little bit of thinking about how to read Tanakh and be able to see in this book, to see life leaping out at you. Okay, now, it's also the parsha of Birchas HaMazon, V'achalta, if you're makbid, to say it the proper way. You know, you can tell a real Talmud Chacham, if when you listen to his benching, he says, Kakasuv v'achalta v'savato v'erechtas Hashem elokecha. Why? Because anytime you put the emphasis on the end of a word, that's future. V'arashta, v'darashta, v'chakarta, heite v'hine emes, v'dibarta elam. So if you have the word, like, it ends with a tav, and you put the emphasis on the mil ra, that's future. For the emphasis on the mil el, that's already past. So 90% of the words in Devarim are all future, because Moshe is talking about the future. You have to be really careful to hear Sefer Devarim from a really good Baal Kriya, because even though he may get the vowels correct, if he gets the mil el mil ra incorrect, he's changing the tense of the word from future, v'arashta, v'chakarta, v'dibarta, uvata, l'adama, until past, which they didn't come to Eretz Yisrael yet, and you should be machzer him. In some shuls, because of Kavod Abrios, they're not machzer him. But here you have v'achalta, Hashem saying, you will eat this savata, and you will already have been satisfied. So it's describing a state after you're satisfied. So it's mil el, v'achalta, v'savata, uverachta, Hashem elokecha. So if you really listen during benching, the people who really, very few people know this. I know a lot of big rabbanim who don't know this. So, you know, it's like, trick your big rabbi, your big father, bench out loud for me. Oh, yeah. V'achalta, v'savata, uverachta, as Hashem elokecha. Either way, Birchas HaMazon is the only one of two brachos that are min haTorah. Anyone know the other bracha that's min hatara? Most brachas at the Rabbanan? Okay, Benjamin, Benji.
Birchas HaTorah.
Very good. What's the Makor for Birchas HaTorah?
I'm not sure.
It's a pasuk in Hazinu, ki shem Hashem ekra, havu godel lelokeinu. That very good. So there are two brachos that are min HaTorah. Benching, v'yachalta v'savata v'achdas Hashem l'kecha, and, of course, Birchas HaTorah. Now, most of the brachas that we recite, namely bracha Rishona, of course, they're not min HaTorah. But what's the makor? Where do they come from? What are they based on? So you've got two very different makaros. And these two different makaros, and this I want to teach you how to see different makaros as portals and microcosms for different thoughts, for different ideas. The most famous reason that we make a bracha is based on the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos says, Asr li adam lehanos min olam azebeli bracha, kol hanene min olam azebeli bracha, kilu gozel sakadosh baruch hu. Namely, this is not our world. This world belongs to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. La Hashem ha'aretz u'meloa. The Gemara quotes the pasuk. Aye, there's another pasuk that says Hashemayim shemayim Lashem v'haretz asan lefnei Adam. The Gemara says kan lefnei bracha, kan liachar bracha. That before you make a bracha, Lashem ha'aretz u'meloa. After the bracha, ha'aretz nasan lefnei Adam. By the way, the phrase v'haretz nasan lefnei Adam is the title of Rav Amital's Sefer on Machshava, which I'll quote Amir Tashem as often as I can to you to give you a sense of who he was and what his important thought was, maybe even today a little bit. Now, behind this svara is basically the world isn't mine. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's. I need to eat. I need to drink. I can't be a thief. So I'll ask Hashem for authorization, but there's nothing meaningful or inherent about eating or drinking. I need to eat, I need to drink. So I have to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as if, let's say, Uriel, I have to cross your house to go to the shul or something. It's snowy and I want a shortcut. So I say, Uriel, can I please cut through your home? And it's just a shortcut for me. So I need it. And one of my needs. So I have to ask you before I steal from you. But Rabbi Akiva had a different drasha. He tried. It's not sure whether it was successful. The Gemara Mizdochit, but it's Gemara Brachas Lamed Hey. When the Gemara talks about not Meiser Sheni. Meiser Sheni are the first 3 years you bring a tenth of your fruits to Yerushalayim and you eat it there. The fourth year is called Neta Revai. A special halachos, the pasuk says, Kodesh Hilulim Lashem. It's a pasuk in Parshas Kidoshim, in Yutes. Let me find the pasuk for you. I have a Tanakh here. Where is the pasuk here? And in the fourth year, Yekol Perio Kodesh Hilulim Lashem. This is actually not my Sushedi. I'm sorry. I misspoke. The first 3 years of fruits, not grains. The first 3 years of fruits are called Arla. You can't eat them. The fourth year, the fruits are treated like Meiser Sheni. You bring the fruits to Yerushalayim and you eat them in the same way you'd eat Meiser Sheni. I just misspoke. So Rabbi Kiva says that just like when you're eating these fourth year fruits that are like Meiser Sheni, you're celebrating HaKadosh Baruch Hu's delivering you fruit and financial success and you're in Yerushalayim and you're eating and it's a celebration. It's a Yom Tov. Kodesh Hilulim Hashem. It's an experience that has Kedusha. And you're saying Hallel to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Similarly, every time you make a bracha, it's based on this pasuk Kodesh Hilulim Hashem. That when I have a steak, or I have a piece of cake, or I have a milkshake, or whatever you have, that's a chance to sit in front of Hashem the same way you'd be sitting in front of Hashem in Yerushalayim with your Neta Revai, with your fourth year fruits, and to say Hallel to Hashem, not just for your fruits in their fourth year in Yerushalayim, but anywhere you are, in Tinek, with your steak, with your Duggies, or whatever, I don't know, with your, sandwich club, whatever you're eating, and to say, I'm staying at Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's a very different view of eating. It's a very different view of the world of brachos, but not just the function of brachos, but what should I feel like when I'm eating, when I'm involved in something physical? Should I feel like, this is gross and subhuman, and it's not a world of Kedusha? And the world of Kedusha is a Gemara and a Chesed and a Mitzvah and a Lulav. I have to eat, so I can't be a thief, so I'm asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for permission. Or I see this world as integrated in my Avodas Hashem. And when I'm eating, I'm experiencing physical pleasure. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu made me that way. He could have made me like a computer. When a computer gets power, there's no physical pleasure. There's no emotions. So why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu give me physical pleasure when I'm eating? Because he wants me to enjoy that food and to use that experience to understand him better, understand myself better, be a happier person. And my bracha is halal Hashem, saying, thank you, Hashem, for letting me eat and letting me enjoy. How do you view the world around you? It's not just bracha, and it's not just eating. But how do you view the world of Gashmias? How do you view the world of Olam Hazeh? Is it a meaningless and empty world that you just have to navigate your way through and avoid any hazards and dangers because it's really a world that's empty, as many of the Baalei Mussar suggested? Or I think something which is much more in line with the way we view our world, it's a world of great opportunity, great potential, great experience that can enrich you, that can deepen you, that can make you happier, that can make you more comfortable, and can enrich your life as an Oved Hashem, can enrich your life as a human being, and by extension, you'll be a deeper Oved Hashem. So I think it depends. A lot has changed over the last 200 years since the Baalei Mussar. The Baalei Mussar lived in a very backward world. So it's easier to base your world based on that view that this world is empty and meaningless. But I'm not sure if in 2020 or maybe 2019, because 2020 feels a lot like 1820, but let's say 2019, all of a sudden, it's harder to read the Mesillas Yesharim and say, oh, this world is dark and empty and meaningless and purposeless, and then go to the Yankee game in your SUV with your cell phone after watching Netflix. It's like a disconnect. You're reading one view of the world when you're in the Beis Medrash, and then there's another world that you're part of. And if you want to integrate and feel like the Beis Medrash and the outside Beis Medrash is one, you're in Oved Hashem the whole time, sometimes that second approach is more helpful to people. And the truth is you have to build your life based on the two of them. I remember Rav Lichtenstein once said, Chazal have a very famous phrase, that this world is like a passageway and the next world is like a palace. And prepare for the palace when you're in the passageway. Sir Varen told us once, some people feel that since this world is only a passageway, you should ignore it to the best of your capability. Some people feel that since this world is a passageway, they want to renovate it for the benefit of people that will follow them through the passageway. So you can't change, a great quote, by the way, you can't change the hierarchy between Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh. Olam Haba is the palace. Olam Hazeh is the passageway. But maybe the passageway is something you should invest in and integrate into your world of Kedusha. I'm going to, Mirtz Hashem, talk about this at some point during the year because Hasidus really did a lot of revolution. We associate today Hasidus with people that are more austere and deprived and removed from the world. That's not really what Hasidus is. Hasidus really felt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence is all over and is really only a quantitative difference between learning Torah and eating because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in Torah just like he's in food because Hashem created everything. And if you could find Hashem's presence in food, you can serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu by eating the food as well. So Hasidus really did toy with the ability to integrate the physical world. I just sometimes feel that boys your age sometimes have the sense that to be more from is to be less involved in this world. And that's not always true. Sometimes you can create bifurcation. We were in the Beis Medrash, you talk about this world being meaningless. And then when you leave the Beis Medrash, because the world, if let's say you wanted to move to Me'a Shearim or to B'nai Brak. I was just in B'nai Brak about an hour ago. Let's say I want to move to B'nai Brak and live an austere life and live without running water on Shabbos because they really are machmir and live without a car and live in an apartment of two bedrooms with 15 children and not have, and that's the life you choose for yourself because you feel that's a better and holier way of life, then for sure, then that life reflects the approach of the world is empty, meaningless, dark, and avoided. But if you're going to live in Tinak, or you're going to live in Alon Shvud, or you're going to live in a world that embraces modernity and uses modernity and uses Zoom and uses the internet, and then you're going to learn about Olam Hazeh in a way that's very, very discrepant with that, then you're creating two selves. There's the self when you're reading the Mesillas Yesharim, then there's the yourself when you're at the Yankee game or the, and it just doesn't stack up, and you're not able to bring frumkeit into the world around you. Okay, so I see we're way, 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 way past our 24-minute limit. So I'm going to stop here. I want to talk about Yerushalayim, but we'll talk about it, Rich Shem, some other time. Again, just to review, we're not happy today, but we have to think about what's happening in our world. This is clearly a tumultuous world, and it's clear that before Mashiach comes, there's a lot of tumult. So there's a lot of chaos. There's a lot of sickness. There's a lot of divine intervention. So don't lose sight of that fact. We have to struggle with the day-to-day mental health, medical health and corona and keep performing. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending us signals, at the very least to know that we're living through important times. Number two, We want to conquer as much land as we can. One day we will. In fact, all indications in Tanakh are that Eretz Yisrael in the days of Mashiach will actually stretch until Beirut and will stretch until Damascus. So those are, we're talking about lands that suffered a blast, but one day they're going to be lands, presumably they're still, it's hard to know, but it seems like we're going to extend north early. But it's just as important, even more important, to build a people capable of setting those lands in the way we want. And we spoke about two different ways to view brachos. Is brachos something you just want to get permission from Hashem, or brachos means you're using a bracha to say, thank you, Hashem, for this experience of eating. Thank you, Hashem, for letting me see such a beautiful landscape, letting me see such a beautiful ocean. Okay, guys. Anything new to report from the United States of America?